This is The National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin, and we're here once again to answer your questions.
This is Doug, and I'm calling from Fargo, North Dakota.
Hi, this is Linda from Texas.
My name is Linda Swallow. I'm from Baltimore.
I'm 86 years old.
My husband and I are awaiting his green card.
I'm wondering how the pandemic is impacting the U.S. immigration process.
This worries me.
Can someone with viral antibodies still be contagious?
Does the sheer fact that I had a positive flu test imply that I did not have COVID?
Can this be true?
When the antibody tests are available, who will be able to get them?
Thank you.
NPR journalists and outside experts are with us to offer solid facts, to tell you what we know, and to correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that too. Please send us any questions you have about health, the economy, or the realities of how we're living right now, even haircuts, to npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, you can use the hashtag NPRConversation. But every night we begin by answering the question, what happened today? The House votes tomorrow on the latest coronavirus relief package. It includes funding for small businesses, hospitals, and testing. Here is Speaker of the House, Democrat Nancy Pelosi.
If we want to open the country, if we want to open our economy, the key to that is testing, testing, testing.
The death toll from the virus in the U.S. is now more than 46,000 people. Officials in California trace two of those deaths to February.
I think what these deaths tell us is that community transmission had arrived much earlier than we were able to detect it. And I think it really highlights the importance of the shelter in place in protecting the community and preventing hospitalizations and deaths from COVID-19.
The mayor of Las Vegas, where tourism is critical to the economy, is pushing to reopen the city's hotels and casinos. New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo says he feels the pressure to reopen, too.
We make a bad move, it's going to set us back. We can't make a bad decision. This is no time to act stupidly. I don't know how else to say it.
President Trump has signed an executive order halting immigration into the U.S. for 60 days.
We have to take care of our patients. We have to take care of our great American workers. And that's what we're doing. So I've just signed it just before coming into the room. And very important.
We want to focus on that issue for a while longer, so we've called reporter Michelle Hackman. She covers immigration policy for The Wall Street Journal. Michelle Hackman, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So as we just heard, President Trump signed an executive order that he says will suspend immigration for people seeking green cards for 60 days, adding that the measure was needed to protect U.S. workers. We just heard him say that. But there are some exceptions for temporary workers. So can you just walk us through who will be affected by this?
Yeah. So the president tweeted on Monday night that he was suspending immigration. But what he actually signed tonight is much more narrow than that. The president is suspending new green cards for people applying outside the country with some exceptions. So, people who are applying to come here and work, people who are applying through the diversity visa lottery, people who are getting sponsored by family members to move here, can't put in applications for green cards to move here for the next 2 months and possibly longer. But there are big exceptions to that rule. Even among family members, Americans can still bring over their spouses. They can bring over their children. And all temporary visas, so people who are coming here on H-1B visas, those are the high-skilled immigrant visas, migrant seasonal workers, anyone, a student visa, all those people can still apply for visas. If you're living in the United States, you actually are not impacted by this order at all. And so it's a much smaller number than we were envisioning. It's about, 25,000 people a month, potentially.
Michelle, that at the same time, both U.S. borders have been closed. Both the southern border and the northern border have been closed for non-essential travel. A lot of the international travel has been put on hold due to the pandemic. So how does this play into what's already in place?
You're totally getting at the right question. The president signed an order today, but really his administration has been curtailing most immigration for weeks. In March, he, as you said, shut down both borders, particularly has been turning away any sort of immigrant crossing the border illegally. Even those who are asking for asylum, for protection here, they're turning back, which is sort of almost unprecedented. That hasn't happened sort of in modern American history. He also, as you know, has blocked travel from China, blocked travel from Europe, and, you know, visa processing at most consulates around the world has stopped anyway. So, you know, very few people are able to come here as is.
So let's get to some listener questions on this subject. First, we have Haley in Portland, Oregon.
I'm wondering how the pandemic is impacting the U.S. immigration process. My husband lives in London, and we started his green card application in March 2019. We're now finally at the point where we're waiting to get his interview date. However, given that the consulates are all mostly closed, I'm wondering if USCIS has a plan for how they're going to address this growing backlog of cases in an already overtaxed system.
Michelle, what do you think?
It's a really good question. You know, technically, your husband, Haley, is okay under this executive order that the president just signed. His case is going to move forward. He can still qualify for his green card. But the question you raised is a really good one. You know, most of these consulates around the world are closed. Immigration offices in the U.S. are largely shut down. And so visa processing is moving slower than it was before. And so it's possible that you may face delay.
Let's go to a question from Mark in Washington.
My question is about the stimulus check or lack of. My wife is a legal permanent resident. She received her Social Security number when she immigrated in August 2019. I'm a U.S. citizen. We have a two-year-old daughter. Our income is well within the limits for a full-size stimulus check, and everyone I've asked for has received their checks, but we haven't. But this worries me. Yesterday, I read an article in the LA Times that said, families with an immigrant spouse will receive no stimulus, even if the other family members are U.S. citizens. Now, that's paraphrase, but the article did say that in no uncertain terms, and maybe the reporter was overgeneralizing, but can this be true?
Michelle, I want to mention here that we have heard this from a number of other listeners. So what do we know about this?
You know, it's a serious concern. the rule of thumb that you're going to want to use here is that if you are a person filing your taxes with a Social Security number and everyone who's on your tax return, so your spouse, your kids, if everyone has a Social Security number, then you should be good to go. You should qualify for your stimulus check. There are very narrow exceptions to that. Either if you have entered the country extremely recently, you might not qualify. However, the bigger thing to note is that people who are filing tax returns with members of families who are undocumented immigrants and file taxes with using something called an individual tax identification number, you know, that's something where undocumented immigrants who want to file taxes still can, or even, you know, people here living in the United States, like spouses of visa holders who are not able to work, still want to file taxes, can. But if you are filing jointly with a person who does not have a Social Security number, nobody in the house gets a stimulus check. And so this is going to impact possibly tens of millions of families with undocumented family members.
I think I have time for one more. And this is Linda in Baltimore.
I have a friend who is a legal asylee and has a work permit. I was wondering if she is qualified to get the stimulus payment.
Okay. Michelle, as quickly as you can.
Sure. Good question. She has a Social Security number, so yes, she can get a stimulus payment, and she can also file for unemployment.
All right. Michelle Hackman, thanks so much. Michelle Hackman covers immigration policy for the Wall Street Journal. We really appreciate your being here. Thank you.
Thank you.
And joining us now is NPR senior science editor and correspondent Rob Stein. Rob, welcome back once again.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I think we're going to hear from you again later, but we know that Congress is including billions in the next relief bill to ramp up testing. What's this money going to pay for, and how do you think it'll help?
Yeah, it's a big boost for testing. It's the latest relief package contains $25 billion for testing. The bulk of the money, $11 billion, is going directly to state and local governments to do all sorts of things that is urgently needed, really, to scale up testing. That includes things like, you know, hiring staff to work in testing labs, buy the tests themselves and the equipment, and buy crucial supplies to do the tests, you know, things like swabs to collect the samples and special chemicals to transport specimens and extract and analyze the genetic material in the virus. That's really important because those have all been running really short and creating real problems for trying to keep up with the huge demand in testing. The funding also requires the federal government and each state to come up with specific strategies to finally have enough testing, and that should help. And the money could also be used to track people down who've had contact with infected people, so-called contact tracing, which is really important to try to keep the virus in check. Some of the money will also help employers test workers, and the CDC will get about $1 billion to do things like expand its testing capacity. The NIH will get $2 billion to do things like develop new tests. So all of this should help a lot.
Well, we're going to hear from you later. We have a lot of questions about testing, Rob, as you surely know. So we're going to look forward to that. That's NPR senior science editor and correspondent Rob Stein. Rob, thanks again. Talk to you soon.
Sure thing.
You can hear much more of our extensive coverage when you download the NPR One app. Go to the Explore tab and click on the coronavirus outbreak for our curated stream of stories. And if you have questions, remember, we want to help. Go to npr.org/national conversation or on social media. Use that hashtag NPR conversation. Up next, we're going to answer your questions on a sensitive subject, advance directives.